Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Calling Tau City, turn on your radio. I know we had some words last time, but that was so long ago. I got your message. It was a little harsh, you know. It's still a little hard for me to hear. Please take it slow.
Welcome to Starship Sofa, part of the District of Wonders Network. Everyone has a story in the District of Wonders. Come and find yours.
I'm tuning in to your transmissions. I'm rooting, waiting to be found. And I'm building rockets. I'm pointing them to the moon.
This is the Starship Sova. Everybody, welcome. Hello and welcome to show 652. I am your host, Tony C. Smith. Hello, everyone. I hope everyone is fine and dandy. Before we get into the main fiction, I just want to give you my overall quick little thoughts, not telling you any spoilers, on the final two episodes of Star Trek Discovery. Bitterly disappointed. I don't know what was going on. It was directed by Jonathan Frakes, Riker. Jonathan Frakes, is it? And it just like was a total different couple of episodes from the norm. Do you know what I mean? And it just didn't sit right, and it was in some places laboured with this, like into another world, and they were catching like cancer because of this, in this kind of the depth of this, like well of a world, like atmosphere sort of. Oh, it was just, and then it just was. It seemed like a cheap movie. You know what I mean? I wasn't impressed at all, to be honest. Like, where the Mandalorian was just like, just left you wanting more and more and more. Anyway, that's, I would love to hear what, because we've got Amy, our very own Amy H. Sturgis on today's show. I would love to hear what Amy has to say about it as well. Just the last two episodes, because up until that point, I was digging. But it just was, you could just tell it was someone else, you know, like messing with it, and just didn't sit right for me. So, tell you what's coming in today's show. We have Love by Eve Tushnet. That's coming in today's show. And like I mentioned, our very own Amy H. Sturgis. So, the story first appeared in Third Order magazine on the 8th of December, 2008. Eve Tushnet is the author of one non-fiction book and two novels. Amends, which 2015, and Punishment, a Love Story, 2019. This story is narrated by Tatiana Gray. Tatiana is a critically acclaimed actress of stage, screen and the audio booth. She has been nominated for dozens of fancy awards but hasn't won a single damn thing. She went to New York University and lives in Brooklyn, New York, and you can find her at tatianagray.com. So, the Starship Sofa is very proud to present
Love by Eve Tushnet, published July 1st, 2015. Man's greatness, even in his concupiscence, he has managed to produce such a remarkable system from it, and make it the image of true charity. Blaise Pascal, Pensées. This is the story of my one hiring failure, how I made the wrong decision, and how I made the right one in the end. This happened 7 years ago, when the worst of the social diseases had passed, but the plagues were still fresh in everyone's mind. So business at the restorative resorts was better than ever, and employee screenings and compliance were more important than ever. I got a lot of stick for hiring humans. We're one of the species the social diseases hit hard. In our human bodies, the plague manifests as immunosuppression. We're wide open to every nasty bad that wanders through air or bloodstream, and we can spread it across species lines. Human staff have unique advantages, though. We're clever, more in our actions than in our words or gestures. And we bring a flamboyant artistic flair to the hospitality business. So I wasn't about to quit hiring humans. I determined to do better and to implement more through pre-employment screening, which I supervise personally. I don't have any problems with ex-cons, as anyone who read that piece on my arrest last year knows. Hard-drinking, high-living Trin Hatchell spends a night on the rocks. I love that headline. I have it scrolling across my office wall over the cocktail island. Many of my best staffers have a few criminal convictions. Yeah, even at a class joint like Octaviana. Why is this? I'm not sure, but here are a few theories. Ex-cons are grateful for a second, or 15th, chance. We had to make one girl wear a mask because her face was drug-scarred like meteors had hit her. But she'd gotten clean, and I'd never seen somebody work so hard in our massage lab. Or the exact reverse. Ex-cons are hedonists. Some of my crew are hard-drinking and high-living, for sure. So they think creatively and can anticipate a client's needs. They think like the client. Ex-cons have invented one of our most popular drinks, the Hurricane Sayonara, 6 of our 8 exclusive live-action games, and the formula for our famous lava bath. They love their work. They come in early and leave late for the fun of hurling fire at laughing, dodging clients, or performing their prison dramas on the snow lanai. Ex-cons know how to please people. You either adapt or go under in most prisons. Ex-cons can read people, let me know when a client will be trouble, can mollify and flatter, or give just the right amount of sass to make the clients pleased with their own tolerance. And yet, ex-cons can also be crazy freaks with impulse control issues who will run a kitchen or a laundry on stimulants and bravado until you fire them. I love these guys, because if you intimidate them just once, you're their girl for life. Or at least until you fire them. So I don't worry when somebody's last job reference is a laundry boss at an off-world pen. In this particular case, the guy, we'll call him Masao, even had a prison advantage. He'd done time with one of my favorite sous chefs, another human we'll call Harold. Harold remembered him and vouched for him. He said Masao was, and I quote, humble, patient, adaptable, professional, and kind. As you can guess, this description set off a few alarms for me. Humble, patient, that's perfume, I told Harold. But how is this guy supposed to be both professional and kind? Do you mean he gives the impression of being kind, or what? Harold took my meaning immediately. I wouldn't worry, he said, although looking back, I seem to recall that he hesitated. I failed to sniff the warning in the air. He's adaptable. He'll be completely professional. Yeah, not reassuring. I grilled Masao. We're under quarantine, I pointed out, in case he'd missed the big yellow signs and warning sense. Tell me what that indicates to you. He searched my face briefly and said, maintaining a professional attitude is the key to the prevention of social disease. No gratuitous acts, no actions taken to succor or shelter anyone who is not a paying client. Good. That actually isn't right. You can help the staff here, bosses and co-workers and subordinates, as long as it's done from your self-interest. I'm helping you now by telling you this, and there's no danger, but you've got the basic idea. Just in case, I gave him my standard spiel on avoiding plague. Humans as a species are sloppy with the truth. That's part of what makes us good at serving in and managing restorative resorts. But it also means that 80% of what we think we know is a mix of misinformation, wishful thinking, and masochistic paranoid fantasy. Even with the plague, which threatens both our lives and our social positions, humans don't always bother to get the facts. So I laid it out. Once the infection becomes active, humans have a 50% survival rate and a near 100% contagion rate. We are most likely to spread the plague through contact with other humans, but we are capable of infecting or activating all of the known susceptible species. The earliest form of plague found in humans became active during times of heightened levels of oxytocin. That early variant was all but eradicated in our sector when the new, more virulent form arose. This new strain of plague is more similar to the kind suffered by most other susceptible species. Little is known about which chemicals or brain states it responds to, which is why we can't screen for infection during the hiring process. All we can do is watch transmission patterns to learn what to avoid. There's no vaccine, and despite what 50 rumors will tell you, there's no cure. Controlled experiments found that merely extending help to another person will not transmit or activate plague. The aid must be offered as a form of kindness, to use an awkwardly unscientific term. How do I know if I am being kind? Masao asked, ducking his head anxiously. He shifted his feet in the restorative tea washing over the floor. It doesn't actually have any chemical effect for humans, but we still find it soothing, maybe from watching other species enjoy it. You don't, I told him. No one can be sure how much love, I guess you'd say, will activate the infection. That's why it's imperative that you serve others only within the parameters of your job. We make our living on the appearance of kindness, and our clients trust us to know the difference between the image and the substance. I lectured him some more, and he responded with expressions of gratitude and compliance. I saw in him a mix of good manners and bad luck, my favorite industrial compound. I sent him off to do the blood tests and brain scans, and when they came back clear, I made the hire. For many long months, I forgot about him, or noticed him only fleetingly in the interstices of Octaviana's daily crises. Over time, I accumulated evidence that he and Harold were a couple. They shared that unmistakable cloud cover of surreptitious communication and unspoken connection. When something went wrong, they glanced first at one another, involuntary looks of alarm and concern. At times, the space between them seemed to pulse with longing, its emptiness making their intimacy more obvious, like the vase you suddenly see between two silhouetted faces. That worried me a little. Not because such liaisons are against the rules. They are, but they always happen, and I don't have time to be the sex police. The kitchen where Harold worked, and the service staff where Masao worked cleaning rooms and calling down more exotic requests to room service, are both very high-stress arenas. The staff there work better when they know they can get the erotic and affectional release they need. But sexual connection among humans is volatile. It can be a mutually fulfilling exchange, need for need, strange longings satisfied, or it can sharpen longing, intensify estrangement, push us to acts of great courage and great stupidity. As my best friend from resort school liked to say, love is just courage plus stupidity over time. I know of 7 other species with at least one language in which the term making love is a euphemism for sex, and if any of my employees' sex made love, we might lose our quarantine status and bring activated plague into Octaviana. So, in between clearing a noisy, invasive fungus out of the laundry and renewing our spacewalk permits, I found time to interrogate Harold and Masao. They persuaded me that they understood the nature of the plague and were aware that they would lose their jobs, their freedom, and possibly their lives if they went beyond a mutual exchange of wants. Many people, on hearing the difficulties involved in running Octaviana, ask, why don't we just put in universal surveillance? Our clients would revolt if we did. Would you want your every action public if you were at the finest restorative resort in the universe? We cater to all our clients' legal needs. And just about everything is legal here, including many that break their species' strongest taboos. So no, I can't just put in surveillance. We'd go out of business the very next day. I kept them on. My second bad decision. A while later, a minor celebrity came to Octaviana to uncoil. He was a human named Sadrach Kelly. Pretty much nobody's ever heard of him, but he was a big deal to the humans in our sector. He'd instigated an award-winning political prank, and so he was not only demi-famous, but demi-admired. Kelly was also a short, violent, obnoxious drunk. Within his first 16 days at Octaviana, he had caused me 7 separate headaches. He tried to swim in the lava baths. What about heat-proof guests only is so hard to understand? He pitched a screaming fit because we didn't stock Asti Spumanti, an earth liquor even I had never heard of. He tried to make Masao, his room attendant, perform one of the very few acts that are illegal even in Octaviana. And this isn't even counting all the trouble I didn't hear about. When I went up to his suite to deal with the Asti Spumanti situation, it reeked of disinfectant, which he also complained about, but that was Masao's problem, not mine. It was with a great and terrible glee, then, that I learned that he had been stripped of his fortune and remanded to Sector 6 prison for tax fraud. The agents who came by to bring him in requested a full perp walk, and I was more than happy to oblige. We put out a news release and offered our in-house transmission center to both media and law enforcement. I noticed that someone, probably someone who'd met the foul little rodent, had put floodlights all along the route they'd take to the transport carrier. A crew of the human employees asked for, and received, leave to line up along the route and spit on him as he went by. This particular form of humiliation is almost unique to humans and often misunderstood by other species. Cross-culturally, spitting is more likely to be a sign of affection than disgrace. That might be why humans are so sensitive to it. If somebody does it with intent to insult, well, for humans, in the near-Earth sectors especially, it's one of the worst things you can do. I'm not sure why. Maybe because it reminds us that we're only humans, or maybe just because it reminds us of home. But I'm very sure Sadrach Kelly deserved it. I was giggling as I stretched out in a chaise lounge in the lobby to watch. The agents were having a great time, too. Hamming it up, joking with each other. Mob scene in the lobby. And then they got to Kelly's suite. And he wasn't there. I got to watch on my phone as they went from room to room, looking under the bed, opening the tank, pulling back the curtains. They stopped joking. I stopped giggling. They started threatening me with a charge for aiding in the escape of a fugitive. Our lawyers got on the phones, and I put headache number 8 on Kelly's account. It was a PR disaster. They did find him, eventually. He'd been smuggled onto the transport carrier and shipped off to the Pokey an hour before his ritual humiliation was scheduled to begin. I had news and entertainment, compliance education, everybody and his brother's cousin's parakeet yelling at me. Masao was one of the first people I interrogated, since as Kelly's attendant, he might have seen something. And he confessed immediately. I couldn't put him through that, he said quietly. You have 5 seconds to save your job, you broke-brained patchwork donkey. Why'd you do it? They were going to spit on him. He spat on me! Masao actually had the gall to grin. Yeah, he spat on everybody. But still, that doesn't make it okay. He was already going to prison. They didn't have to do it like that. Sorry, human. You did it out of pity? He didn't say anything. I grasped for straws. He didn't bribe you. Tell me he bribed you.
With what credit?
I don't like firing people, but I'll do it. I really don't like firing good workers, and up until then, Misao was one of my best, which is why he'd gotten stuck with Shadrach Kelly in the first place. But he had to know it was coming. When did you do it?
Only 6 hours ago. Don't worry, I'm not contagious yet.
Yeah, you have 1 hour to get out of my resort and off my planet. I'm calling your ID into the quarantine center. What you do next is up to you. The quarantine trackers are very efficient, and compliance in the resort sectors is near total. He had the grace to flinch as I keyed his number in and sent it. I stared at him, this quiet, patient man, his palms chapped, a big burn across his face where one of our heat-proof guests had gotten handsy. You could die. He didn't say anything. You could die for the sake of Shadrach Kelly's dignity. What is wrong with you?
He said it would kill his mother to see him like that.
I managed not to scream until he'd left my office. Within a few minutes, the nervous system told me he'd left Octaviana. But my problems weren't over. He'd denied that anyone had worked with him, but he was no longer a trusted employee. I had to verify his denial. Personal, in-depth interrogation turned up nothing. But I had my compliance staff search the belongings of any employee I knew to be close to Misao. And in Harold's belongings, they found something I hadn't seen since I was a little girl. No one else knew what it was. They thought it was some kind of jewelry or puzzle. A small, flat, gold box in a sunburst shape, wrapped in a thin scarf of faded purple cloth, with small white tiles dappling its length. Each tile had been etched with a mysterious symbol, and a dark paste had been rubbed into the grooves to make the symbol. A circle, connected to a bunch of teeth with the line, basically, stand out blackish red against the off-white of the tiles. Just the sight of it flooded me with memories of my auntie, my crazy auntie, my favorite. She'd taught me that the symbol was a key, an earth key so old-fashioned even she had never seen one except in cartoon form or on the bone tiles of a stole. I reached out a hand, superstitious, my fingers yearning toward and fearing the bone tiles. The martyr's paste rubbed into the etchings of the key. That intense, sensual intimacy hadn't signified sex. It had been the intimacy of confessor and penitent. I fired Harold, despite his protest that he hadn't consecrated bread or touched his vestments in years. He only kept the picks and stole for sentimental reasons. He was an apostate, and he wasn't infected. He said Misao had begged him for confession, but he'd never done it. I called him into the quarantine center anyway. I don't regret that decision, not as a business person. I really had no choice. For years afterward, I was terrified that plague would break out in Octaviana. The plague had such a long incubation period in both stages, the initial infection and then the activation. So Misao could have come into contact with a plague carrier before he even came into Octaviana, while he was still in prison. And even if he never met another carrier, as long as he lived, he would still be at risk of activation if he performed any unwarranted kindness in the next 3 years, meaning that everyone who had come into contact with him between his kindness to Kelly and his capture by the quarantiners was also at risk of activation for up to 3 years, including me. And by the way, all those people were barred from kindness for at least that long upon pain of death. We escaped that danger, but for a long time after that, I was reluctant to hire humans. These guys had made us look really bad. For the record, the vast majority of humans are competent, and as unlike Shadrach, Misao, and Harold, as you can imagine.
But that night, I had a hard time getting some sleep. I lay down on the floor in my suite and turned the tea on. It started to swirl at the small of my back, soothing me. But I still slept poorly. I felt like a little child again, helpless and full of remorse, in a world I didn't understand. Incompetent. I dreamt of the really bad days of the plague, when I would kneel on the snow lanai and watch the guests disporting themselves, and think of all my friends who were dying, their strength failing them and their flesh wasting away like the snow melting beneath my knees and hands. So many of my friends from resort school were dying in those days. Professional conferences had smelled like hospitals. Introductory breakfasts all started with a roll call of the dead. I dreamt of my friend Shelters from Cold Nights, the one who had said that line about courage plus stupidity over time. Shaking her scarlet hair when I made a joke through the quarantine intercom, until the hair fell out in hanks onto her hospital bed and I couldn't figure out what to say anymore. The nurse reminded her not to comfort me. It would only make her weaker. I would never do anything to bring that horror into Octaviana, so I don't regret a thing. But even now, whenever I think about Shadrach Kelly, I wonder what my auntie would say. She died of plague herself, so she'd know how important the quarantine is. But she told me on her deathbed that she didn't regret the small kindness that had activated her infection. I still think about what she would say to me now. I'm pretty sure she'd be angry at Harold, too, just like I am. But I can't help thinking it would be because he might not have heard Masao's confession. Not because he might have.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And there you go. Huge thank you, Eve. Thank you so much. That was just fantastic. And Tatiana, it is an honour to have you on again and again. Just thank you so much for helping out. So that is the kind of the story. I was going to say that I was nearly jumping in. That is it. But before I get to Ames, though, I'm still into To Sleep in a Sea of Stars by Patrick. I forget his name. What a book. Is it Patrick? Anyway, just Google to Sleep in a Sea of Stars. It is. I'm listening to the audio version. I'm just lost with it. Absolutely loving it. Anyway, our very own Amy H. Sturgis. Ames.
Hello, my friends. It's time for another look back into genre history. I hope that you and your loved ones are safe and well. I was going to wish you a happy new year, but I don't know what it's like where you are. Where I live, in my country, it feels like we're sort of trapped in a long 2020. So, not the year you'd want to stay in for any extra moment, and yet here we are. But at any rate, in the spirit of a new year, I thought today I would recommend some podcasts that take particularly deep dives into specific topics or areas of genre history. There are a lot of them, and so I am just limiting myself to a few that I think are particularly good, but I would also love to hear from you other podcasts that you think are doing this well. I will start by talking about two podcasts that deal with major science fiction franchises. The first that I'd like to recommend is a podcast I really enjoy and appreciate, and it is called Talking Bay 94. It's the only Star Wars podcast that is devoted solely to interviews with cast, crew, creators who have been involved in some way with the history of Star Wars. And what I really appreciate about this podcast is that the host, Brandon, really does his research, and he finds people, not just the usual suspects, but people who were involved at every layer of creating Star Wars stories. From the people who created the prosthetics to make aliens, to the people who worked with training and choreographing for lightsaber duels, everything in between. And he's preserved some really important oral history, in some cases from creators who we've already lost since his interviews. And the thing that I appreciate most about Talking Bay 94 is that the host, Brandon, really does his homework so that his questions are very well researched and really get to the heart of any given individual's contributions to Star Wars. But he also knows when to back off and just let these people tell just fascinating stories. And, of course, many of the creators who were involved with Star Wars were also involved with other high-profile, path-breaking, really important works in science fiction history. And there are stories about those other films and television series and projects as well. So, as oral history of a franchise goes, you really can't beat Talking Bay 94, and how it helps to preserve Star Wars history. Now, another science fiction franchise-related podcast I would recommend is Trek Files. And this podcast, which is hosted by Dr. Trek, Larry Nemechek, is part of the Roddenberry Podcast Network, and is about the materials to be found in the personal archives of Gene Roddenberry. So each episode takes a deep dive into a document or related documents from those archives. And then those documents are also posted so that people can read these bits of Star Trek history. These documents are letters and memos and reviews and notes, and they offer a different perspective, a different window into Star Trek history. Just to give you a sense of how a document then becomes the springboard for a discussion about history, I'll mention an episode that I recently listened to, which was a letter from Gene Roddenberry to actor Robert Vaughn. They had worked together on The Lieutenant, and when this 1965 letter was written, Vaughn was a megastar portraying Napoleon Solo in the incredibly popular The Man from U.N.C.L.E. The letter deals with Roddenberry attending a performance of Hamlet that starred Robert Vaughn. And then the discussion and analysis went on to connect the dots between the Man from U.N.C.L.E. television series and Star Trek in a lot of different ways. Thematically, the nuts and bolts is about how both of those series came to be, the connections between the creators and the actors, and how a whole lot of contacts were made and lessons were learned with the television series The Lieutenant, which was, in a sense, the training ground for the creators of both Star Trek and The Man from U.N.C.L.E. So a lot of interesting history there to be unpacked using the springboard of this letter from Gene Roddenberry to Robert Vaughn. So interesting podcast, each episode based on a document found in the archives of Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry. Again, that is called Trek Files. Now, another podcast I'd like to recommend is also based on documents. It is called Voluminous, The Letters of H.P. Lovecraft, and it is hosted by Sean Branny and Andrew Lehman of the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society. And here I want to first read the official description of this podcast. In addition to his classics of horror fiction, it is estimated that Lovecraft wrote 100,000 letters, or roughly 15 every day of his adult life, ranging from one-page diaries to 70-page diatribes. Perhaps 20,000 of those letters have survived in the hands of private collectors and at the John Hay Library in Providence. In each episode of this podcast, we'll read one of these letters, or part of it, and then discuss it. In his letters, H.P. Lovecraft reveals an amazing breadth of knowledge of philosophy, science, history, literature, art, and many other subjects, and forcefully asserts some highly considered opinions, some of which can be upsetting. And, of course, his letters offer a fascinating window into his personal life and times. Although we've been working with Lovecraftian material for over 30 years, we still find interesting new things in his letters, and while we don't claim to be experts, we look forward to sharing them with a wider audience. That is the description of Voluminous, The Letters of H.P. Lovecraft. And there are several things about this podcast that I find really useful and interesting. First, Lovecraft wrote a lot of people, and they, many of them, were tied into various aspects of science fiction and weird fiction and speculative fiction in a certain formative time. So through these letters, we see glimpses into the amateur press associations and the pulp science fiction magazines and the way that different authors would approach publication. And you see Lovecraft responding to manuscripts of a variety of writers who sent their work for his feedback, and also responding to feedback he has received from people who were his first and second readers. The hosts do a great job of putting each letter in historical context, so you know about the person to whom Lovecraft was writing, and you get a sense of how they played roles in the development of genre. People like Robert E. Howard and C.L. Moore and Robert Bloch and other authors and editors and publishers. Very interesting stuff. And I also really applaud how Sean Branny and Andrew Lehman do not try to excuse or look away from the more disturbing and disappointing aspects of Lovecraft's own thought, particularly racism. But there are several aspects of Lovecraft's ideas that are difficult to swallow, and they face that head on and have some uncomfortable but really necessary conversations about how Lovecraft's ideas connect to his work and how we should think about and address and wrestle with his legacy and influence. So I see this as a very challenging and important and fascinating look, not only at Lovecraft and his times, but also the many, many other creators who were involved with the history of the genre and how it developed and how it evolved, and seeing them also through a different window as well. So really worthwhile material in these letters and the conversations that they inspire. That is Voluminous, The Letters of H.P. Lovecraft. Now, I'd just like to make mention of a couple of other podcasts that look at writings of specific authors. One is Grad School Vonnegut. That is a show where two literary critics, Jerry and Aaron, go through all of Kurt Vonnegut's novels. And they take deep dives into each of those works. They also have guest experts as well. For example, an episode on the novel Bluebeard from 1987 included a conversation with Susan Farrell, who's a professor in the English department at the College of Charleston and one of the founders of the International Kurt Vonnegut Society. These are really well-researched and thoughtful and insightful discussions about Vonnegut's work. So if you have been looking for an excuse to read through Vonnegut or take a really close look at one of his works, Grad School Vonnegut is a good podcast to check out. I would also recommend Doings of Doyle, which is a podcast dedicated to the works of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who, of course, was the creator of Professor Challenger and Brigadier Gerard and, most famously, Sherlock Holmes. Paul M. Chapman and Mark Jones are the hosts. They are both authors and scholars, experts on Doyle. And they, and I'm quoting here, aim to promote knowledge, appreciation, and study of Doyle's writings, both fiction and nonfiction. And one of the things that's notable here is that they do not stick to the well-known works. They actually seek out lesser-known publications and really shine a light on those. Just to give you an example, this past Christmas Eve of 2020, the episode was about An Exciting Christmas Eve, or My Lecture on Dynamite. That's a comic short story that Doyle wrote in the summer of 1882 and was first published in December 1883. And they post those stories that are available so that you can read along with the hosts and then get the most out of their analysis and discussion. It's like taking an Arthur Conan Doyle class, Doings of Doyle, and I do recommend it. And speaking of taking a class, I will mention once more a podcast I've already mentioned before, and that is Monster, She Wrote. Hosted by scholars Lisa Kroger and Melanie R. Anderson, Monster, She Wrote is about women in the horror genre, but more broadly even women in speculative fiction, particularly speculative fiction with a dark bent. There's quite a lot of crossover between, for example, science fiction and horror. Kroger and Anderson were the authors of the book Monster, She Wrote, which I have already recommended in a past segment. And in this podcast, they focus on a particular work that might be a short story, it might be a novel, it might be a film, it might be a television episode. And they, again, really dive deeply into the work, its context, its importance, all to put the spotlight on women creators and storytellers in the genre. And there's a lot of good genre history in that podcast. And so, again, this is certainly not a thorough list, but I did want to bring these particular podcasts to your attention as podcasts, I think, that have a lot to share and teach us about genre history and some really interesting windows into corners of genre history that we might not see or explore every day. So again, that is Talking Bay 94, Trek Files, Voluminous, The Letters of H.P. Lovecraft, Grad School Vonnegut, Doings of Doyle, and Monster, She Wrote. I look forward to joining you again with something completely different when we join together again to take another look back at genre history. Until then, stay safe and well, my friends. Thank you.
Amy, I thank you. Tell us what you thought, Ian, of them last two episodes of Star Trek Discovery, because it just felt like over-the-top production, like fight scenes and everything were just like, but they come over, you know, there was like a lot of money spent, but they just come over as just like hammy, almost, for me. It was just like, God, man, how we just get back to the normal stuff? It just like, let's go out in a big bang and let's just, and it just didn't work. You know what I mean? It was just, for me anyways, it was just so slow in places and then so hyper in places and then characters doing things out of the ordinary and, you know, and I just thought it was a bit all over the shop. Bitterly disappointed anyway. Ames, let us know. Anyone, let us know. starshipsover@gmail.com. So that is show 652 put to bed. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope you will stick around for the next one in 2 weeks' time. Until then, just like to say, good night from me.
Thank you for listening. Slowly won't get to you anytime soon. Can you reach me? Is my signal getting through? Turn on your radio, I wanna talk to you. This signal's going light speed. By the time I get my say, I might already be on to you and on my way. But you're so far from here, and at best I'm moving slow. So I'm waiting on your call at home with nowhere to go. Can you reach me? Is my signal getting through? Turn on your radio, I wanna talk to you. I wanna talk to you. Cast myself on a radio wave, I might get to you someday. If books were rocket ships, I'd need only the will to fly. I'm still building word by word, and I'll get out there by and by. I'll get out there by and by. I'll get out there. I'll get out there by and by. I'll get out there by and by. I'll get out there.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.